Well, good morning. My name is Nate, and it's good to be with you all this morning, and good to be joined by those of you who are joining us via streaming from home. The title for my sermon for this morning is Clean and Unclean. Clean and unclean. In each of our readings for this morning, we see Scripture struggling with the boundaries that we sometimes create between different groups of people. The passage from James in particular gives instructions to the church not to show favoritism or partiality, but remember that God has chosen those whom this world deems to be poor to be heirs of the kingdom. Well, this morning, I want us to dig a little deeper into what was happening in the first century church and in ours by opening up an issue that is highlighted in our gospel reading for this morning. An issue that defines our world now as much as it defined their world then. And that issue can be summarized in one simple word. Dirt. Dirt. In other words, what we're dealing with in our gospel reading for today is the relationship between the clean and the unclean. The issue of dirt, the relationship between clean and unclean, was a crucial issue in first century Israel. It remains a crucial issue for us today. Let me try to demonstrate that by using an illustration. What if when I came here this morning and I told you that next Sunday I wanted you to wear something to church that represents how you actually see yourself? What if I said that? And what if you didn't? What would we see? Well, we might see a 15-year-old in the youth group dressed like a call girl. The boys in her school think porn defines sexual normality, so they harass her to text them with revealing pictures. She gives the boys her body in exchange for a cheap affirmation that she matters, that she's pretty. And then she sits in the pew, chews the communion wafer, and mumbles the Lord's Prayer. But inside, she feels dirty. Maybe there's also a 41-year-old man who wears a shirt two sizes too small. You see, he wore that same shirt two decades ago when his life came to a crashing stop. He was a drunk 21-year-old driving home from a frat party when a woman crossed the dark street in front of him, and every night since, he sees her face twisted in a scream. He's married now, three children, and owns his own tech company. But inside, he's still a junior in college, blood smearing his hands, the poison of self-loathing coursing through his veins. And maybe we'd meet a 33-year-old woman wearing a t-shirt with the words human garbage printed on it. Because after two disastrous marriages, three kids with three different men, and a failed stint in rehab, and a current boyfriend more into his drinking buddies than her, those two words pretty much sum up how she feels about herself. I'm just trash. Use me up and throw me away. I don't deserve to be in this church. I'm just a piece of bodily filth littering the pews. What do you think? Would we meet any of those people? I'm guessing that if we really did decide to do this, really did decide to dress in a way that actually represents how we feel about ourselves, many of us would be surprised at what we'd see. But also ask yourself this. If we weren't surprised, if we didn't meet anybody like this, isn't that a bigger problem? Let me put it like this. What if those people aren't here? don't we have to ask ourselves why those people aren't here? Now, the language we use in church when talking about how we and the world are messed up is usually some version of right and wrong, morality and immorality, justice and injustice. And I'm okay with that. That's certainly fine. But I've come to believe that what really influences our decisions, just as it influenced those in Jesus' day, isn't based on right and wrong. It's something based in something more basic to the human condition. And that something has everything to do with dirt. The 15-year-old in the youth group felt dirty. The woman with the human garbage t-shirt felt dirty. There was guilt and regret and disappointment and depression and all that, yes, but at a more visceral level, at the core of who we are, what we struggle with is not whether we've done right or wrong, but whether we're clean or unclean. In her monumental work, Purity and Danger, the anthropologist Mary Douglas defines dirt as matter out of place. And this matter out of place, this dirt, elicits from us the psychological response of disgust. Now, we experience this every day, but we usually don't think about it because it's become so subconscious. For example, this morning, you probably showered or brushed your teeth or put on deodorant because you don't want to have BO or bad breath, because for people to catch a whiff of our natural body functions is deemed unacceptable. We don't want to smell dirty and so disgust people. But what about, have any of the men here, maybe by show of hands, ever worn a beard? Okay, maybe a few of you did. Well, so if you have, ask yourself this. What's it like for you when you're eating soup? Now, keep in mind, none of us think there's anything wrong with the soup in our bowls or the soup in our mouths, and there's really nothing wrong with soup on our beard. After all, it's all the same soup. But when it's on our beards, it looks disgusting. Why? Because it's out of place. A soup beard is a dirty beard. Now, where this gets most enlightening and maybe even frightening is when matter out of place, dirt, becomes people out of place, human dirt. In our moral mapping of the world, we all become politicians. We all resort to a kind of gerrymandering, carefully sectioning off boundaries based on how clean or unclean we feel that people are. Certain people who look or act a certain way give us the creeps, and so we keep our distance. We shun them, and we certainly don't touch them. They look, smell, behave in an unacceptable way, a way that's not in keeping with society's norms, in an out-of-place manner. And so psychologically, we label them as unclean, as dirty. Christian author Brennan Manning captured this poignantly in a well-known autobiographical story about a time in his life before he became a Christian. One morning, he woke up in a doorway still in the fog of last night's liquor with vomit stinking from his sweater. He looks down the street to see this attractive blonde woman coming toward him with her young son in tow. Then all of a sudden, the boy breaks loose from his mother's grip and runs toward Brennan. But before he can reach Brennan, the mother charges forward, covers her son's eyes, and says, "Don't look at that filth. That's nothing but pure filth." And like we might do to get a mangy dog out of our path or a dirty diaper off the sidewalk, she kicked Brennan Manning. Now, there was a mother who had a highly developed sense of dirt, of matter being out of place, of the disgusting quality of this dirty drunk who might have polluted her son just by his very existence. Brennan was unclean. He disgusted her. But there's one thing that this woman didn't realize. Her disgust, as strong as it was nothing. Nothing compared to the disgust that Brennan felt for himself. Because nobody, I mean nobody, feels the weight of the untouchable nature of the untouchable one like the untouchable one himself. And I can't help but wonder, as I read our gospel reading for this morning, if the Syrophoenician woman felt the same way when she referred to herself as a dog. Every hour of every day, the categories of clean and unclean, dirty and undirty, regulate our lives biologically, socially, morally, and yes, even religiously. And it's religious dirt that needs our utmost attention. Because on the one hand, it's in the religious sphere that we feel dirt most intensely. And yet, on the other hand, so many of our churches just make matters worse. Think, for example, about the language some Christians use when they talk to teens about sex. Not sexual morality, you're making the right sexual choices, but sexual purity and impurity. That's the language of cleanness and uncleanness, dirty and undirty. And while we pay lip service to our churches being welcoming places, you and I both know that if certain kinds of people walked into many churches today, out of place people, dirty people, and certain members with a low tolerance for dirt would be phoning their pastor later that afternoon, those type of people don't belong here, they'd say. We may take up the chance of forgiveness, but we've all experienced the reality in the animal farm of the church, in which all sins are equal, but some are more equal than others. And this, finally, is what brings us back to our gospel reading for this morning. This is the deeper reality, the hidden dynamic at work when a foreign woman approaches Jesus and asks him to heal her daughter. The text says that her daughter has an unclean spirit. She is dirt, out of place. In fact, it's worse than this. Not only is she unclean, but according to the book of Leviticus, anyone who touches her is dirty, is out of place, is unclean too. So what's going on here? Well, if the language of clean and unclean originates from the book of Leviticus, then maybe by going back to Leviticus, we can get it right. In the language of Leviticus, unclean people are mikuf lamachana, outside the camp. They might be soldiers returning from war who have blood on their hands, and they might be those with a skin disease that renders them ritually unclean. But whatever the reason, they're outside the camp. They're on the fringe. They're living the life of dirt by being out of place. So what does God do with these people? Write them off? Tell them to clean themselves up? Let the local Philistine charity do their work with them? No. According to Leviticus, God comes to them in the person of God's priest. The clean and holy priest goes out to the unclean and dirty person. It is the priest who crosses the ritual boundary, bringing with him companionship and mercy and the healing agents that God himself has provided. The priest leaves the kingdom of the well to climb over the wall into the kingdom of the sick. He doesn't wait for the one full of dirt to bring himself back. God goes outside the camp to bring him back home, cleansed and sanctified and welcomed once more into the fellowship of Israel. And it is this Levitical model of ministry that Jesus is following in our gospel reading for this morning. Only with Jesus, it's even better. Jesus ups the ante. He not only goes outside the camp to spend time with the shamed and the excluded and the unclean. He puts skin to skin. And he touches the unclean. Notice the details in the second half of our gospel reading for this morning and how Jesus puts his fingers into the ears of the deaf man and uses his saliva and even touches the deaf man's tongue. Why do you think he does that? Jesus was God incarnate. If he wanted to heal this deaf man from the other side of the planet, he could have. So why does he do it this way? Well, according to Leviticus, according to the purity traditions, Jesus should have cleansed these sorts of people first, and then, and only then, after they've been clean, only then could he touch them. But time and time again, this is not what Jesus does. First, he makes contact. First, he expresses physical solidarity with the one outside the camp. First, he reaches out and expresses intimate love and concern and mercy while the unclean person is still unclean. And then, by his word, he cleanses them. Ephphatha. Be open. Be clean. Here we see Jesus living out the full breadth of his incarnation. He becomes all that we are, that we might become all that he is, as Saint Athanasius put it. Or to paraphrase Saint John, the Word became flesh and slummed it among us. He doesn't remain safely ensconced within a walled castle of cleanness, but goes outside the camp, outside the zone of urban gentrification, into the haunts of the unclean. In other words, he goes where we live with our shame, with our soup-stained beards and our sin-stained lives. Christ becomes the priest par excellence who searches out lepers and kisses their scabs. That's the most amazing part about Jesus. that he, being the Holy of Holies, takes that Holy of Holies out to us. Jesus is the walking, talking, touching, and healing tabernacle of God, who everywhere he goes is unbreaking, undirtying, and unshaming us. He not only brings us back into the camp, but he brings us to the Father. No longer as pariahs or garbage, but as kings and queens for whom the angels sing, and with whom the whole church dances until the sun rises up again. Let me close with a story. In his book, Mortal Lessons, the surgeon Richard Selzer tells this amazing story about an encounter he once had following a surgery. He writes this. I stand by the bed where a young woman lies, her face post-operative, her mouth twisted in a palsy, clownish smile. A tiny twig of her facial nerve, the one to her mouth, has been severed, and she will be thus from now on. The surgeon, Seltzer, he says, had followed with religious fervor the curve of her flesh. I promise you that. Nevertheless, to remove the tumor in her cheek, I had to cut the little nerve. Her husband is in the room, and he stands opposite the bed. The young woman speaks. Will my mouth always be like this? She asks. Yes, I say. It will. It is because the nerve was cut. She nods and is silent, but the young man smiles. I like it, he says. It's kind of cute. And all at once, I know who he is. I understand, and I lower my gaze. One is not bold in an encounter with God. Unmindful, her husband bends to kiss her crooked mouth, and I'm so close that I can see how he twists his own lips to accommodate hers, to show her that their kiss still works. I remember that the gods appeared in ancient Greece as mortals, and I hold my breath, and I let the wonder in. The gods did appear in ancient Greece, but I don't think any of them would have humbled himself to twist his own lips to accommodate one who wasn't the way she used to be. But I know a God from Israel who would and who did and who still does today. Amen.